Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS with the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., and the Limark Technical Net has been going on for 40-odd years, mostly under the direction of Dick K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key a few years ago. And so we continue this Technical Net every Sunday night at 8 p.m. in his memory. And I hope that you're all there, as opposed to sitting in front of the TV watching the Super Bowl, for our own little Super Bowl edition of the Limark Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and I'll give you the usual links. Okay. If you need to reach me and you can't get me on the radio, then email is a good idea. That would be either for mailbag questions, or if you have any topics that you would like to discuss or hear discussed or be part of a discussion, or if you have any technical puzzles that you would like to share with me that so that I can share it with everyone else and we could all learn something, or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space or NASA-related web blog or a NASA report or YouTube, then the email address for me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you would like to email Paul directly, you can reach him at spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also have a link page. I link a whole bunch of articles that I have found interesting over the past week. So take a look at them at your leisure. They'll be available 24/7 for the foreseeable future. And you can get to that link page by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available. If you'd like to use it, you can either access it by going to Limark's webpage and following the links, or you can type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to our chat room. And I try and maintain an audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and I leave it on the rest of the week. So you can listen in to Glen Oaks' W2VL repeater. Just type into any browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you the audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people of Mike KC2NJI's great archive site, amateurradio.tv. He's had over 1 million visitors, and he has archives of our Technical Net going as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of many amateur radio operators who moved away from the area or have become silent keys. Let me drop, and I'll tell you my plans for tonight. Okay, we're going to have a regular session, hopefully. We'll ask for any questions of a technical nature. I would prefer if people offer up questions of amateur radio related technology, at least at first. But, you know, we can discuss any field of science, technology, and even medicine, keeping in mind, of course, that we do not treat nor diagnose over the radio. But I'm more than willing to take up any topic that anyone throws down. So keep that in mind. That should take us to around 10:15, and Paul WS2N will join us with the SpaceNet report until about 11 p.m., and then I will return and put a bow on it and wish you all a good week. So that's the plan if the universe allows us to do it. I hope it does. So please, I hope there's some participation, some activity, despite the distraction of the Super Bowl. So if you have any questions or comments tonight of a technical nature, please push that push-to-talk button. Give us your first name and your call sign.
November 2X3, Juliet November, with three topics. One is hail microphones for ham radio. The other one is spotting unwanted signals or disturbing ham radio operators. The third one is electrically short ham radio antenna.
WB2KWC, Ken.
Wes and Ken recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight for any questions or comments?
82OGB, did you get me?
Not the first time, apparently, but I got you this time. So you're on the list. You're third. I hope you stick around with us. Last time I called your call sign, you were gone.
I was trying to think of what I could ask. That was probably like a week ago, but I actually found something that I might want to ask.
Okay, very good, Craig. So you're down in the number three position. Anyone else want to put their name down tonight for any questions or topics for the Limark Technical Net? Okay, we'll start with the first three, and hopefully as time goes on, there'll be other people with other questions or other comments. So, Wesley, you have a few topics for tonight.
One of them is K9EID, a ham radio operator, but also a businessman, and pretty much known in broadcast industry or sound industry for their microphones. HAL, which is, I don't know why they call him Dr. HAL, but it's a Bob HAL. Born in October 5, 1940, American sound and radio engineer, most well known for creating the template for modern rack systems. He founded a company in HAL Sound in 1966. Let me jump. So, on Dr. Roy website, you're going to find a link to YouTube to the new microphones PR40 and PR30, which have a warm, natural sound, eliminates contact noise for broadcasting. And there are a few other links. One is for history of HAL in ham radio, and the other one is for Dr. For Bob HAL, I don't know why they call him in the video, Doctor, for HAL, Bob HAL, in Wikipedia. In 1970, HAL Sound entered in amateur radio. He developed HC series microphones intended for amateur radio communication. HAL Sound was also an early installer for large satellite dishes for radio. He used microphones rejected by professional sound systems due to its mechanical defects, causing nonlinear or not in spec frequency coverage. By that, he gained sales and made hams happy, as this is what we need. He makes both handset and microphones. Okay. So they make cables and sound products for amateurs. That would be Icon microphone and handsets, Kenwood microphone and handsets, or headsets. No, not handsets, headsets. Yesu microphone and headsets, aircraft headsets and microphones, Lex for Dr. Roy, headsets and microphones, Tentec headsets and microphones, and Vintage Collins and Drake radios, headsets and microphones. Interesting for those who want to organize the expedition, they have a form where they give you a sponsorship for your DX expedition. There should be not less than four operators, and you fill up the form and they will give you whatever you need. I'm not sure how much their coverage is, but maybe Dr. Roy knows. Dr. Roy Beck.
Sorry, Wesley, I had to do something in the chat room. What was the question?
Do you know by the chance what is the condition for the HAL company to sponsor the expeditions?
No, unfortunately, I don't. I know a whole bunch about Bob HAL. I've exchanged emails with him. He's a very pleasant, friendly sort of guy. They call him doctor because he got an honorary doctorate. So it's a sign of respect and endearment because, you know, he's a pleasant guy. He's one of those guys that doesn't get into arguments probably with anyone. He seems to be a strange person to put next to rock and roll people because his particular music that he's adept at, he's made albums, is organ music. So this short little guy, quiet, meek, who's into organ music, is the sound guy for rock and rollers. So he's a fascinating guy. He has run Ham Nation for many years. I watched it at the beginning, and I even got reviewed some of the stuff that I wrote on it. So he's a nice guy. I have a PR40. I have headsets. I find them a little tight on the head. Now, theoretically, you can kind of work the metal and loosen it up, but it's never really been terribly loose, as far as I've been able to make it. So I tend to prefer my Radio Sport headset. But they do make good microphones. They cost a little bit extra. There's a premium to them. But they're reasonably good quality. The push-to-talk trigger I am using right now this very moment is a Heil switch.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
K2CJE, what makes their microphone better? Over.
N2XJ. Ironically, the defect, their rejected value from professional sound system makes them very unique to ham radio. So Dr. Heil, I don't know how to probably pronounce it. How to pronounce it, Dr. Roy?
I have heard most people call him Bob Heil.
Okay, Bob Heil. So Dr. Bob Heil, the honorary doctor, was a rock and roller, rock musician, and he opened up the company. He made plenty of microphones used by professional broadcast companies, and he found that there is a high level of rejection of those microphones because they are not up to the spec. But then he found that instead of us using the filtering for lower frequency or higher frequency on our equalizer, he made at first equalizer, and that was the Heil EQ200. But then he find out that instead of making an equalizer and having a good microphone to be limited, how about if he does it differently? He takes those rejected microphones and measures them by their usability in ham radio. So he found that some for the man voices, some frequencies from 400 kilohertz, if they want to have a high pitch to 1500 kilohertz, would be quite good and expected, and would give a full ability of drive AM or then single sideband transmitters. And that was the beginning. Then he used a little bit more effort to make that better. And to XGN.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to correct. He's a nice guy, but he was never a rock and roller. He was the sound guy for musicians, many of which were rock and roller. But like I mentioned earlier, his musical choices was organ music. Really different than rock and roll.
The Wikipedia says American sound and radio engineer, most well known for creating template for modern rock and sound system. He founded the company Hell Sound in 1966, which went to create unique touring sound system for bands such as the Grateful Dead, The Who. He invented the Hell Talk Box in 1973, which was frequently used by musicians as Peter Frampton, Joe Walsh, and Rich Sambora, and still used till today.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't dispute any of that. I'm just saying that I wouldn't really call Bob a rock and roller. He's kind of out of place among rock and rollers. It's kind of an intriguing combination of characteristics, him hanging out with the drug-addled rock and rollers, because he strikes me as a guy who probably never had a drink of alcohol. But, yeah, he did a lot of engineering for rock and rollers. He did a lot of coming up with interesting solutions for rock and rollers. He was the sound guy for a lot of rock and rollers. But I wouldn't quite call him a rock and roller. There's nothing against him. He's an organ music guy. You know, if you asked him what instrument he'd most likely have, it would not be a bass guitar. It would be an organ.
Thank you very much for the correction. Yes, it is, but it is not. I mean, it is, but there are some other information. So, yes, he became proficient a theater organ musician at young age, beginning to perform the various local restaurants at age 14. At age 14, he became a house player for Woodford Theater Organ, for Fox Theater in St. Louis, and so on. And, of course, around this time, he became amateur radio operator, building transmitters, amplifiers, and antenna systems. But in the 20s, he built a pipe organ in St. Louis for Holiday Inn restaurant, and he was scheduled to have a concert in Fox Theater at St. Louis, 1970. Something went wrong with it. That was the guy, the Oxley Stanley, the guy that accused with LED, LSD. So Oxley was the one pending drug charge for producing copious amount of LSD, was under arrest not to leave the state of California. So yes, he wasn't. He was a good guy who actually was around the bad guy. And to XGF.
Yeah, Bob is still alive, by the way. So he's still a good guy. He's semi-retired. He still has his finger in his hobby, and even in the business that he apparently sold to another group of people.
Okay. Any other questions?
K2CJE, what makes that expensive microphone better? Does it limit some of the frequency, lower and upper response? It's a nice looking microphone. When I got into the hobby, some of us used carbon microphones. We were easily understood. What makes his microphone better than a stock microphone that comes with some of the equipment? Over.
Well, I would shortly say discrepancy, imperfectly. But he was perfect for ham radio, where the frequency range varies from 200 kilohertz to 200 hertz. 200 hertz up to 1.5 kilohertz, and then you can choose the using equalizer the amount the bandwidth that is good for your transmitter. But that was actually done by Dr. Heil. Maybe Dr. Roy will have a few cents to add.
Well, you know, I mean, I like Bob, but, you know, not enough to shill for him. He makes reasonably good quality equipment. I don't think the microphones are particularly amazing. He makes also different categories of microphones. The PR40, I think, was designed to be a general use microphone. Maybe the PR781 had a little bit more limited bandwidth that he kind of designed better for radio transmissions and such. I kind of got it because I like the look of it, the aesthetics, and it's a decent quality. I wouldn't kind of glow about it. I have it set up on a boom, and I use it sometimes. As I mentioned, I had bought the headset, again, because I communicated with him and I knew him. It wasn't terribly thrilled, again, because for some odd reason it just kind of squeezed my cranium. So I used Radio Sports. So to add, I don't think there's anything exceptional about his microphones. They're consistent and decent. But are they different than, if you wanted to use a decent Shure? No, you probably would get better fidelity with a Shure, but then you don't need really full fidelity for radio use. So, I think it's kind of like, it depends on, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
I would add something. In my computer, Tecanu 2000, I have DISP. That allows me to do low cuts of, let's say, 200 hertz, 400 hertz or more, and high cut of 5,000 hertz. Now, 5,000 hertz would be 5 kilohertz. So, by that, I can have the sound of the receiving station to sound the way they'd like it to sound. Dr. Heil did exactly the same, but on the transmitting side, by trimming or not trimming, simply taking the pile of rejected microphones that they already have a frequency from, let's say, 400 hertz to, let's say, 1500 hertz for men. And that would be good for the best, at best, for steering the amplifier, pre-amplifier of the microphone that is then causing the most of the signal to coming out from the antenna. More full modulation. I don't know how to name it. Maybe, Dr. Roy, you could help me with the wording.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
I don't think the human ear has changed too much in the last 130 years. But Alexander Graham Bell put out studies, and still to this day, they are indisputed as to what is the most comfortable frequencies to listen the human voice at. And that is 400 hertz to 400 kilohertz at minus 10 dB. Of amplification of an electronic device. Let me let it drop.
George?
Go ahead.
Did you mean 4 kilohertz? Because you said 400 kilohertz. And I don't know about you, but I have no bat relatives. I can't hear 400 kilohertz.
I'm sorry. It's 400. It's 400 hertz. To 4 kilohertz. I'm sorry, I had to correct that.
Okay, no problem. I just wanted to make sure that none of us are bats.
Thank you for the correction. All right, so we're designing equipment that goes below and above that. We're designing microphones that go outside of the range that goes above and below the equipment that we're manufacturing. Then we're putting that into the concept here that we want to experience radios. Then we're putting that into the radio, into a driver, and then every radio has an exciter. It's not like it was in the early 50s and 60s and earlier than that, where we actually put our signal out from the driver only. We have exciters now. All of these sections have their limitations. So you're going to deal with the narrower of the sections that are going to put it into the limitations of each section going forward. 400 hertz to 4 kilohertz. It's nice to work sideband, 400 hertz of voice frequency. Sideband 400 hertz to 3 kilohertz is comfortable. Then we begin to trim the bandwidth in order to manage the signal reception capabilities. Then we go back and start to manage the bandwidth of the audio frequency capabilities in order to deal with the bandwidth capabilities we can't manage with the different types of radios. So if we're to say that the microphone is really the controller of what's going on here, and it may not be so, because we have the driver, we have the exciter section, we have the radio itself that cannot exceed it. Now, let's look at the receiving end. What bandwidth can he listen to? In his audio section of radio, what do they have it set at? So we're not going to accomplish much by really letting our microphone take control of the signal. The only thing our microphone is going to do is give us good signal between good audio between 400 and 4KC and good gain to drive the radio's driver. KD2FIU.
Well, George, I would also add background rejection. That's also a nice feature of some microphones, where the background room noises are somewhat more muffled than other microphones that have way too much gain on them.
Yes, understood. Because we can also put a... If a microphone is too loud, we can lower the gain in the radio. We can lower the gain in the microphone. We might be overdriving the input driver stage for the audio of the microphone. Or, and if you can't control it by the microphone, you could step back a little. However, we're not going to just say by putting a microphone on a radio, we're going to improve our signal dramatically. I like to say dramatically, meaning drastically and dramatic. But you got to also look at the receiving end. Is this person's receiver going to be picking that up?
Okay, I'll pass it back to Wesley. Once again, in my estimation, it's what you like. If your ear is pleased by the sonic qualities of a given microphone, you know, I mean, I have graphic equalizers that clean up a lot of messes. And there are still some significant differences between dynamic and electret microphone elements that can't simply be you know, switched between the two by position or mic gain. But nevertheless, I think it's a very personal type of thing. And again, Ed, I you're being devil's advocate here of you know, why is it so good? And it's interesting to be hearing Wesley make a salesman's case for the microphone. Since Heil and Bob doesn't pay me anything, I don't feel the need to do that. It's a consistent microphone. Is it a real extra special one? I mean, the one I have is the PR40, which is really designed for podcasters and studios. So it's not really an amateur radio designed microphone. It doesn't have those bandwidth limitations that the PR781 does. But I'll throw it over to Wesley because he's the guy selling this product.
Yeah, and to explain, no, it's not really that I wanted to sell the product. It was the video that I came across, and that video is on Dr. Roy's website, I believe he put it. Did you put it?
Not yet. I'll probably do it around the SpaceNet report.
Okay. So that would be TrueLink's YouTube for the interview with Bob Hill, whatever. K9EID. That would be History of Ham, Hail Ham Radio. And Wikipedia for Dr. Hale. But I believe I beat up all of the bushes around that. I don't want to really this to sound as I'm trying to help him to sell. It is not my intention. The next section we have is a few weeks ago, actually 2 weeks ago, we had a situation that somebody was putting the carrier on me, and I said at that time that I have two laps, and I'm in possession of certain devices. So let me go to that. Purpose of this section is forensic and surveillance for unwanted radio signals identification. Only a part of the techniques is covered key on purpose. Understanding voice recognition, voice sound screening methods, that would be the voice identification and speaker comparison analysis, that is based on premise that every voice is individually characteristic enough to distinguish it from others. Factors contributing to voice uniqueness include the size and configuration of the throat, nasal, and oral cavities, and the shape, length, and tension of the vocal cords. Another factor is determining voice uniqueness. That factor lies in the manner in which the articulator muscles are manipulated during the speech. Okay, and to XGN, we have oral spectrographic speaker comparison. So we're talking about the methods to find the bad guy. The oral spectrographic speaker comparison is a combination of oral listening and instrumentation comparison of one or more known voices with an unknown voice for the purpose of identification or elimination. That all includes another technique, which is biometric voice identification and speaker comparison used by FBI, NASA, CIA, and others. Biometric voice analysis uses speech statistics, spectral format method, and Gaussian mixture models, GMM, to compare voice samples. Biometric voice analysis differs from the oral spectrographic method in that it requires a significant amount of computing power and relies more heavily on statistical data, which is processed by the computer, than the findings of human analysts. If I would make some comparison, that would be a quote from company that does such services. So for those who are very much disturbed by others, you can go to those companies and you can actually use their services. And this is the quote from them. As experienced expert analysts, our highly trained and qualified forensic team uses top-of-the-line hardware and software technology to carefully handle and truly analyze your evidence audio. So this is an example of service entity that is ready to take the job of identifying disturbing, purposely distort, or voice mimicking technique by the people not identifying themselves. This is N2XGN. Then we have a voice recognition system using a microcontroller that has nothing to do with that what we talking about, Dragon voice recognition system, that is, but it used similar modules. The individuals are really easily identified through it, and the chances of illegal activity, sometimes theft or fraud, are reduced. ADC is used, which converts varying analog voice signals into digital pulses or digital signals to be easily understood by the computer. The computer drive already has the form of speech stored in it. The voice signal is decoded and checked against the stored forms, sometimes due to the presence of other voices and noises. And some summary of that would be for you to understand ADC digitized sound wave at frequent intervals by taking some precise measurement. This sampled or digitized sound is then filtered in order to remove noise. This is also done to separate the sound in different bands of frequency. So we have a typical sound of the person, but not only, we could have a sound of clicking microphone, but let me talk about the sound. It could be analyzed in different bandwidths, bands, or sub-bands of the bandwidth. Sound also gets normalized. Different people have different speed of speaking, so the sound is adjusted such that it can match with the speed of stored sound template in the memory of the system. For PTT push creep tones, it compares the same transmitter with different microphones and recognizes simulated voice by form of distortion or simulated sound against recorded normal transmission of the same operator at different bands, where this operator is not in fear of being recognized. And I did include the link to that part, although some other parts of my work in this area has all of the links required. For that, I didn't include on purpose the link. Methods of identifying using voice sound analysis by Dr. Sean Fulop. This is very interesting. Before September 11, at my office at Water Center 1 at 77th floor, we were applying for the patent, and we got the patent for resonance acoustical profiling, which was actually we were putting a microphone, which was the piezoelectric foil, on the surface of the ground, and we were listening to the sounds coming up from the underground strata. By that, we were able to, using a very simple photostyler, to convert the sound into the pictures. So we were able to create a picture of the cut of the ground to the depth of 2 kilometers, which would be 1.6 miles deep into the ground, showing all of the differentiation between gravel, sand, clay, and rock, and whatever the strata you have. The boundaries very, very well. We were dreaming at that time that if we have a situation where there is a non-lever of the gold carrying a gold current carrying level, then we would be able to show exactly all of the variation and how that layer is going up and down. But we wouldn't know that this is a gold. We would only know that this is some kind of layer. So then the drilling, taking core out analysis would be needed. The reason that I mentioned about that is because Dr. Sean Fulop created a very much similar situation. Each image is obtained from the very short segment of 50 milliseconds of volo sound. The images show an analysis of the voice sound using specially designed method reassigned spectrogram. Each row shows different repetition made by the speaker. The similarities with each speaker voice are easy to observe, as are the large differences between the different speakers. So it was for the purpose of, in the link included there, you can see how the sound looks like in the picture and how can we spot the bad guys. So this technique is only one example of many of techniques, but it's unique in this graphical representation. And the last one here, a company Qualcomm Incorporated. Many people probably heard about Qualcomm. They also were very much unhappy with some of the operators or some of the people using their frequencies. So a system method disclosed is the base transceiver station called BTS, and that may be uniquely identified. The system analyzed the coverage overlap and relative phase delay to determine likelihood of the candidate of BTS being actual BTS from which a signal is received. As candidate BTS are uniquely identified, it is possible to use additional identification information in an iterative process for further identify additional BTS. So that would be some of the techniques that we use to find who is messing up.
There's one problem with this whole system you propose.
And to exit. So, if there are any questions of anybody, I have just the last segment, and the second will be very small antenna. The smallest antenna, the electrically small antenna. I had a discussion a few days ago with one of the ham radio operators. He was asking me how the very small antenna works and what is the difference between huge big antenna and the small antenna. Any questions to that segment?
Wesley.
Go ahead.
AC2GS. I just wanted to add a couple of things. You mentioned Dragon. I used to use Dragon software. They designed general use versions. They designed medical dictation units. They were bought up by Nuance, and Nuance was bought up by Microsoft. So once again, all that technology now belongs to Microsoft, but there are a lot of other companies. Many of the people listening tonight have hardware that does voice recognition. So the technology is sort of is spread out rather thinly. So, you know, there's a lot of implementations of voice recognition going around. I'm waiting for them to really fine-tune it so that it can tune out the audio that's on television and radios and such, because I still find that it confuses the algorithms, personally. But this too shall come.
Voice recognition was first used by automation, so there were some very simple automation modules for do this and do that, and there was the voice command that has to be repeated. In some cars, you have voice recognition for certain tasks to be achieved or call to certain people, but Ford Transit has a very bad one. And I was driving Ford Transit. I'm not happy with that. But But the FBI, CIA, and other companies, they decided to invest into something that would give a tool for them to work with. Now, the thing is that sooner or later, all of that classified stuff comes up to us. So if I remember when my father told me many, many years ago, I was a small child, that there would be TV sets that are hanging on the wall, and there would be a flood and like a picture, that happened, but only many years later. Let me drop.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
Voice recognition, from my understanding, was developed in the early to mid-1980s for service centers to be able to direct in calls for information required in the financial industry. Well, that first application was used in the financial industry in downtown Manhattan, but the development was coming out of New Jersey, actually New Jersey, Middletown, New Jersey, and in the laboratories over there. They were doing it for financial industries between 86 and 88, and by 89, 90, and 91, they were actually having what was called CVIS, Call Voice Interactive Voice Systems, that were using that type of technology to help direct calls and get the right information to the right person within the companies in the financial industry. KD2FIU.
Yeah, I don't have anything much to say. George said his piece. Voice recognition probably has been worked on by other companies. I don't know if they had they were the one guys that were doing it. When back in the 80s, I had a piece of software. It wasn't quite a voice recognition in that. You know, it didn't parse the words. What it was, I remember, it was called VoicePrint. It was a lock on your computer that you unlocked by saying something at it, and it recognized the owner's quality of his voice. So I'm sure there were a bunch of people working on it in different ways. The financial market had a lot of money to spend on research and the development, so I'm not surprised that they were the first to commercialize it.
No, they actually developed it.
Okay, but again, I'm not aware of the history of voice recognition. Sometimes there's more than one group of people fiddling with it. They might have been the most successful, or they might have been the only guys. I am not that aware of the business. But there are a lot of things that a lot of people try and fail at, and the one who succeeds and certainly the one who monetizes it is the one that gets most of the credit.
A few cents about that, and then go to electrically small antenna. Electrically small antenna. Okay. The study that I was doing with sound was used for analysis of the sound, and converting that sound to pictures. That also triggered my interest in all possible techniques of analyzing signal without just a carrier, or the signal, the FM modulated signal with no voice on it, based on spectral analysis. So the looking at the sound characteristic coming from different transceivers. And yes, I'm not going to go further to that, because the bad guys are listening. That guy we've heard put a moment here.
Wesley?
Everybody is a hero till he gets caught. And, of course, the amount of punishment for that is based on the persistence of the person who is trying to find him. What is really what he wants from him. Okay, and that could be created by, that would be actually fueled by anger, but that could be fueled also by a need to eliminate that bad apple from our community. Anyhow, electrically small antenna, and to XGN.
Wesley? Wesley? Are you sure you don't mean mechanically small antenna?
No. No, electrically small antenna that becomes a mechanically small antenna. That's actually one of the things that some people don't understand.
Okay, I mean, I would assume if it's electrically small, it doesn't need to be mechanically anything else. It's electrically small. But most of Dick, K2RIW, may rest in peace, discussions on the infinitesimal antenna were mechanically very small antennas that were electronically resonated to act as though that they were full-size resonant antennas. So I guess this is a different thing.
Actually, we have a problem with semantics here, because if there is no further explanation, some people might make it confused. It is a very small antenna that is physically small in size. It acts as an electrically huge, humongous one, half wave, let's say. But for some reason, it's called electrically small. But in some areas of the world, by some professionals, it's called electrically big.
Okay, so it kind of degenerates into a semantic argument. I would tend to prefer to call it a mechanically short, electronically long, because the whole concept is you are affecting its electronic length as opposed to its physical length by not lengthening it, but adjusting its inductance so that the radiator acts as though it is a fully resonant, large device. So in most literature I have read, they're mechanically small but electronically large, because you are modifying their characteristics electronically, not mechanically.
Okay, so we explained that problem with semantics. Now, you're going to be surprised what I'm going to say here. But it's absolutely true, it's checked, it's professional data, and it's backed up. An electrically small or electrically short antenna is an antenna much shorter than the wavelength of the signal it is intended to transmit or receive. Electrically short antennas are greatly less efficient and more challenging to design. The longer antennas, such as a quarter or half wave antennas, but are nonetheless common due to their compact size at low cost. And especially for me, when I'm operating with very low frequencies, 137 kilohertz and down. Of course, I could go to some of the mathematics in here, but I'm gonna skip it. What actually technically electrically short antenna that has a length of 2H, such as 2πIH divided by Y, which is the length, is less than 1, and the Y is the free space wavelength. But I'm not going to go to it. I'm going to skip it, because then we're going to go to spherical mode, length function, and spherical Bessel functions.
KD2FIU.
Go ahead. FIU pickup.
George, you have a comment to make?
Thank you, Roy. The most commonly used has been the helical coil for AM radio in small portable radios for almost 60, 70 years. The ferrite core with the magnetic loop around it. They're not incredibly difficult to design for receiving. They're difficult to design for transmitting. And we found that it required mechanical devices or very, very highly stable, electronically stepped devices to use them for transmitting. So what I'm getting at here is that this technology is, it's not new. It's not new. When it comes to receiving, the helical coil, being the ferrite with the magnetic loop around it, is exceptionally, exceptionally valuable if the transmitters are strong. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good, George. Wesley?
George, thank you very much for a great comment. So part of the theory why we can have a very small antenna acting as a huge, electronically huge antenna, there is a semantic problem, but we call it electrically small or electrically short antenna, is based on some theory. I'm going to mention, I'm not going to go deep to it, unless we have another time, because I was occupying TechNet for some time now. So it's spherical modes, Langevin functions, spherical Bessel functions, evanescent mode, the thing that is that was studying the Q factor, and we had some disagreement between me and Dr. Roy. There are certain difficulties of designing an electrically small antenna that includes impedance matching, a small radiation resistance, therefore requiring a large current, and resulting ohmic losses to the poor quality of radiation and efficiency. Not quality, to the poor radiation efficiency, right. Okay, some of the history, thank you very much, George, for that. Harold Wheeler began the study of limits of small antennas with the seminal paper in 1947, The Fundamental Limitation of Small Antennas. Wheeler demonstrated the relation between the radiation power factor and geometrical parameters of electrically small cylindrical inductors and cylindrical capacitors in the circuit analysis. We had another guy, he was a Chinese, L.J. Hu, but he was Chinese-American, born in America, I believe. Anyhow, he derived the theoretical minimum Q factor for electrically small antenna via expansion of the spherical modes. And then we have 1964, there was Colin and Rothschild. Actually, Rothschild, I don't know about this guy. I'd rather go know about Rothschild, the billionaire. But anyhow, some of the examples interesting here. When I was talking about the Zenek wave and I was talking about angle of reflection, which would be no reflection, actually there would be no reflection of, but anyhow. I spoke about the first technology that was Dr. Gobau. Dr. Gobau made the transmission of the energy or transmission of the electromagnetic wave or transmission of the signal through the one wire. So you could have a light bulb 200 watts using one wire only.
Roy, over to you.
George, I don't think it should quite be like that. I'm sure Wesley will be summing up fairly soon.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. So we have a GoBow antenna and Fultz antenna and Rogers Corn antenna. And thank